Welcome to Clear Thinking, a GPS for the Christian mind, teaching you how to think, not just what to think. This is Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples. On today's podcast, Ken discusses 8 aspirational qualities of the Christian mind. This is part 1 of 2. Ken, that sounds intriguing. This is right up your alley, and I know you have also gotten some of these ideas from somebody we know or will know about soon here.
Yes, exactly right. Our good friend, Dr. Steve Willing, he has written an article that I want to touch upon in the 2 programs. It's an article entitled 8 Principles of Sound Christian Thinking. And the purpose of the show, the other day somebody asked me to kind of describe Clear Thinking as a podcast. And I said that the Clear Thinking podcast focuses primarily on sharpening logic and critical thinking, worldview analysis, and developing the life of the mind, reading and learning. And so this is right down our alley. And one of the things I appreciate about this list given by Dr. Willing is that I think almost every one of them is in our up-and-coming book. We have a book coming out. Joe, you've seen it and done some editing on it. It is entitled Clear Thinking in a Messy World, Underlying Messy. And the subtitle is A Christian Guide to Logic, Reason, and Cognitive Biases. So I don't know if I've been as excited about any book for a long time. I think this is really going to be a very helpful volume. Mark Perez has a section on cognitive biases, which is really, really good. And so this will kind of whet our appetite as we wait for that book to come out.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit more about Steve Willing and his connection to RTB.
Yeah, Dr. Steve Willing is a physician. His area of specialization is in radiology, and he has quite a fine resume. He took his medical degree from the Medical College of Georgia, completed internships in pediatrics from the University of Virginia before undertaking a residency in diagnostic radiology at the Medical College of Georgia. And of course, some of our listeners will remember that Steve was a guest on our program. He is a visiting scholar at RTB, and he was one of the reviewers of our book, and he's written, Joe, quite a bit about the idea of reasoning, cognitive bias, moral principles. And in fact, he has a book that we want to recommend to our people here. And I got to make sure I get the title of this book exactly right.
I think it's called Superbia.
That's it, Superbia. You can go, I got my copy on Amazon, so you can go right on there and grab it. And so I'm just going to take some of his ideas, read from the article, and Joe, I'll look for you to give me some interaction and questions.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to cover these 8 aspirational qualities, 4 on this podcast, and then 4 more on the next podcast. So thank you, Ken, for that introduction. My appetite is ready to go.
Okay. I'm calling them 8 aspirational aspects simply from the standpoint that I think all of us aspire to these things. Thinking Christianly or thinking in accord with the Christian worldview or having the mind of Christ, I think we have to aspire toward these things. And so if our listeners hear this and they feel that they're in the biggest room in the world, that is the room for improvement, you don't have to feel bad. We're all aspiring. So let me pick up just a couple of things that Steve Willing says in his article. He says that facts, reason, and experience support our position. And what he is saying there is that all of us, I think, want to believe that that's correct, that we come up with our beliefs. We form our beliefs from rational consideration, like facts and reasons and our personal experiences. But Steve mentions that things get in the way. There are challenges to thinking carefully. Cognitive biases get in the way, where our mind is influenced by factors that keep us from discovering the truth, like confirmation bias. Maybe we go looking just for the evidence that supports our position. That is so easy to do. It's hard to kind of break outside that habit. But there are other things that affect our reasoning ability. I would say propaganda. People put out all kinds of statements. Maybe they want to manipulate you. This is very strong in the field of politics. So we have fake news, yellow journalism, lots of propaganda. You also have conspiracy theories. I'm not saying that there aren't real conspiracy theories. I think that there really have been. But there is kind of a conspiratorial mindset that kind of breaks some of the rules of reasoning. So here is a point that I appreciate from Steve. He says, one cannot reason a man out of an opinion he was never reasoned into. Mm-hmm. Now, that's attributed to a lot of people. I've heard Dennis Prager say it. Dr. Willings gives Jonathan Swift as a source for that. But Steve says, our opinions are shaped by irresistible forces of tradition, social pressure, emotions, self-interest, and unseen spiritual forces. So, Joe, I think right at the beginning, it's important to recognize that none of us are neutral. It's easy, I think, to fall into the pattern to think that, you know, other people have these problems. They have social pressure, emotional, you know, they think according to self-interest in these kinds of things, but we're kind of neutral. And I would say that much of my interaction with people who are highly skeptical or secular, there is a temptation on their part to think that they're coolly neutral, but religious people are biased. Well, I don't hold that view. I think all of us have to be very careful about our thinking. And so nobody's neutral in this process. And of course, Steve quotes somebody that I have met and really appreciate. He quotes the Christian historian Mark Knoll in his book, The Scandal of the Evangelical Mind. And here's Knoll's quote. He says, the scandal of the evangelical mind is that there is not much of an evangelical mind. That's a, you know, that hurts a little bit. But I would describe it as a good hurt. I think one of the challenges we have to face in modern day evangelicalism is an anti-intellectualism, sometimes a laziness about intellectual issues. And I'm not pointing the finger. I do consider myself an evangelical Protestant. But I think we live at a time where we need to be a lot more careful about the mind and about ideas. Now, he also makes another point, and then we'll get into our list. He says that he asks the question, so what constitutes sound Christian thinking? He says it's tempting to settle for the pat answer, thinking biblically, but what does that mean exactly? And he then raises the issue that, teaching people to think critically, to detect fallacies, biases, conspiracy theories, he said that often helps for other people, but it doesn't sometimes help us. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember the one of the great founders of abductive reasoning, Charles Peirce, an American philosopher, mathematician, and scientist. He said, you know, all of us kind of think we don't really need to study logic because we're right there ready to go. But I think Steve's made a good point, and that is that sometimes we have to turn it upon ourselves. You know, these are principles that, yeah, we can correct the mistakes that other people make, but we need to think about ourselves. And then he gets into his list, and I like it very much. And again, I'm going to call it aspirational, 8 aspirational principles. So we're aspiring to them. The life of the mind is like the life of sanctification. We're desiring to grow and, to move into a stronger position. So Steve's first point, and I like it, he says the Christian mind is humble. The Christian mind is humble. Quoting from his article, he says, most practicing Christians have never heard of intellectual humility, yet it is the bedrock principle of sound thinking upon which all subsequent principles depend. And I like the way he gives a definition. If you think about the virtues and vice that we have to work through in the Christian life, one of the greatest vices, maybe the greatest vice, I think people like Augustine and Thomas Aquinas would completely agree that the greatest vice in the Christian life is pride. Now it's easy to think, well, why would it necessarily be pride? Wouldn't it be, maybe it would be lust, or maybe it would be envy or something of that nature. But if you think about pride, if you think about what pride did to Lucifer, where Lucifer didn't choose a bad thing, he chose himself, but he exalted himself above God, a form of pride that led to idolatry. And if you think to some degree, even of Adam and Eve, they're tempted, and yet they still decide, they're told by God not to eat of the forbidden fruit, but they do it to some extent because they want to be like God. There is a sense of pride. So humility, of course, would be the corresponding virtue. And Steve identifies humility of the mind in this way. He talks about 3 things. He says, number 1, acknowledging the limits of my knowledge, experience, and wisdom. I have a limit. Even if you're endeavoring to be well-read on all kinds of topics, there's just so much out there to know. So you want to acknowledge the limits of your knowledge, your experience, and your wisdom. Joe, the more that, I've kind of dedicated my adult life to reading and learning. I wasn't a terribly good student in high school and earlier. Largely, I wanted to play professional baseball, of which I just wasn't good enough. But, when I became a Christian in early college years or began to take my Christianity seriously, the more educational experiences I had and the more I bumped into really bright, thoughtful, reflective people, Joe, the more I saw that they recognize what I don't know. And in many ways, that's kind of the state of a very thoughtful person. There's a lot out there that I don't know. I know enough to know there's a lot of things that I haven't yet mastered. So humility involves, according to Steve Willing, and I agree, acknowledging the limits of our knowledge, experience, and wisdom. He then says that the Christian mind of humility admits the possibility that I could be wrong. Wow. Pride can set in and you can, maybe you're in an argument, maybe it's a formal argument, or maybe it's just a heated discussion where you have a vested interest in something and you just don't want to admit that you could be wrong. Admitting you could be wrong is kind of tough, especially in the areas that we think a lot about. Mm-hmm. And then he adds this, that the Christian mind of humility avoids complacency and self-satisfaction by engaging in the practice of which intellectual humility is explicitly taught in Scripture. So that idea is we want to keep moving. We want to keep being aware of that. And he has a couple passages. I appreciate it. He says, Proverbs 3:7, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. Romans 12:16, do not be wise in your own opinion. Proverbs 11:2, when pride comes, then comes shame, but with the humble is wisdom. And I think of a passage our good friend Dave Rockstad was always quoting, that God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So that idea of humility, and again, I like the 3 points that Steve makes, because it helps us to recognize, no matter how smart you are or think you are, or how much you studied something and given reflection about it, almost all of us have to acknowledge that there are limits to that, that we could be wrong, and that we should take in counter evidence. Joe, any thoughts or comments about that?
Yeah, a brief comment on the point about admitting the possibility that I could be wrong. I think for a Christian, it's tough in the respect that we think we have the truth. We're very confident of it. So when that possibility comes up, I think we're reluctant to consider that we could be wrong. I'm not talking about just things like being wrong in regard to something you said to your wife or your spouse or your children. That's hard enough, but we think that we have the ultimate truth. But could it be that we're still wrong in some other areas and we could be corrected? That one just seems like it's a tough one to admit.
I agree. And I think it probably does deserve some qualification, in the sense that, I mean, I could be wrong in my interpretation. You know, maybe we're dialoguing about eschatology and I take a particular view of the millennium. Well, it could be I could be wrong on that. Or I could be wrong on the question of baptism. Should only adults be baptized, or is it proper to baptize children? Those issues, we can go back and forth. I was once asked by an atheist whether I could be wrong about my faith. And I said, well, let me be as candid with you as I can. I said, I've been studying this for a long time. I've read, studied, reflected, prayed, engaged with this topic. It's going to take a lot for you to convince me that I'm wrong, because I think that there are good arguments. I think that there's a factual basis for Christ, for his life, death, and resurrection. So I said, look, it's not going to be easy for you to convince me that I'm wrong. I believe that I have the truth. I believe it is a revelation from God. So it's not going to be easy. But then I said this, I said, look, I haven't stopped thinking. And I'm willing to look at your arguments. And I said, let me reverse it. Are you open to the fact that you could be wrong? And are you open? And I said, I recognize you may have firm convictions in your secularism, but are you open? And you know, Joe, I have to say, there are Christian people who can seem kind of know-it-alls, like nothing could ever change their mind. But I could add that I think there are secular people who don't doubt or question their skepticism. I think they should be more skeptical of their skepticism. Mm. So it's not just a Christian struggle there. Now Steve makes this point, and I appreciate it. He says, research has shown that intellectually humble people are more agreeable, less polarized, less argumentative, and less adamant in their opinions. Does this describe anyone you know? Does it describe yourself? Mm. You know, I think intellectual humility can allow us to say, look, what's the big picture here? I mean, on this program, we like to talk a lot about historic Christianity. We talk about creeds. We talk about confessional statements. When I meet other Christians of differing denominational or even different branches of Christendom, I insist that we first talk about what we have in common, because once we kind of lay that foundation, it sets the context for the differences. And so I think this idea of humility, I think Steve is right. Sometimes polarization, sometimes argumentativeness, nothing wrong with a good argument. You can be vigorously arguing logically without your, you know, veins popping out in your forehead or, you know, your voice, you know, becoming loud. You can argue very persuasively and rigorously without that. But I think some of the things that we have in society where people are very polarized, there isn't that humility that I could be wrong. So this is really a powerful point. What do I say about humility? I often say, I wish I knew more about it. I wish I practiced it more. Quite frankly, I think pride is a very easy vice to accept. And I'd even go so far to say this, Joe, I think that for those of us who are given to an intellectual life, you know, the life of the mind, the life of reason, study philosophy, theology, science, history, whatever it may be, I think that there is a special need to be careful about pride. And again, if we can acknowledge our limits, if we recognize we could be wrong, and if we avoid complacency and self-satisfaction, I think those are good help moving toward that great virtue of humility. Okay, second point. Again, I'm calling these the eight aspirational characteristics of the Christian mind, and I'm using a great article by Steve Willing entitled Eight Principles of Sound Christian Thinking. So his second principle, he says, the Christian mind seeks wisdom. The Christian mind seeks wisdom. And he gives us a quotation, a definition from the Oxford English Dictionary. He says that wisdom is, quote, the capacity of judging rightly in matters relating to life and conduct, soundness of judgment and the choices, and the choice of means and ends. And he says that this seems consistent with a biblical perspective. It's consistent with what we think kind of generally about wisdom. And Joe, I think a really important point here is to recognize that biblically, you know, when you think about the Old Testament is divided into three parts. So now we're thinking the way the ancient Jews designated the Tanakh, which is the Hebrew word for the equivalent for us, the Old Testament. Well, you have the law, the prophets, and the writings. The law, of course, would be the Torah, the first five books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. The law, the prophets, so you would have the major prophets and minor prophets. You're going to have Isaiah, Jeremiah, etc. And then there's a third designation of the scriptures known as the writings. These would be the wisdom literature. So books like Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, the Psalms. And I like what J.I. Packer said. Packer, of course, was a conservative Anglican Reformed scholar. Packer said that, you know, the Proverbs shows us how to live in a very wise, prudent way. And I think this is one of the reasons why the Bible is so profoundly influential. I think it's one of the reasons why Judaism, even though it's a tiny religion, only about 16 million worldwide, why Judaism has had such a huge influence. That there is this idea of wisdom, and I think of many passages in the Old Testament where it says over and over again, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So wisdom involves a moral and spiritual commitment to God. And thus the idea that to be wise is wisdom isn't just logic and careful thinking. Wisdom also has to come from God as the ultimate mind behind the universe. And I think that that's very important. I think that when we talk about the Christian worldview and we compare it to other worldviews, we have to recognize that, yeah, we may all agree about the importance of logic and argumentation, but that there is also within the context of wisdom a moral and spiritual component to it. And in that way, you could be very good at logic and not have a good background in terms of the theological or the moral kind of context for that. So Steve goes on to say that, we can have careful thought, but how do we take the wisdom literature? How do we take the principles of wisdom from scripture? And how do we apply it to things that are so relevant to us today, like healthcare or science or economics or public policy? Now, that I think is a very important point because, I like to say think worldviewishly. I like to think biblically, but then we also have to think a little bit about the things that we're applying that wisdom literature to. I have to have some facility with what are the major areas of healthcare or science, economics, and public policy. So we want to study. We want to open ourselves to that point. And again, Steve has a couple of scripture passages. He quotes James 1:5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. The other day I was working on a large blog article, 3,000 words, Joe. Hope that doesn't scare you there.
A
But
little bit.
I was writing on messianic prophecy, and there were a couple things where I thought, how do I kind of maneuver? And I just said, Lord, help me. Give me wisdom as to how to think through these ideas and how to present them in a way that is fair to the views of people I disagree with. So I love that idea. If any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. Steve also quotes James 1:6, but let him ask in faith without doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave on the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. When we ask the Lord, we extend ourselves in faith. We say, Lord, you have instructed me to inquire and to ask for wisdom, and I'm going to believe that you're going to give that to me. I'm going to look to receive that. And Steve further qualifies this, again, the second point, the idea of wisdom. The Christian mind seeks wisdom. He says that we want to approach things with a humble and teachable spirit. Again, that pushes back on things like pride and envy and self-complacency and things of that nature. So we've hit two of them. The Christian mind is humble. The Christian mind seeks wisdom. Joe, any thoughts or comments at this point?
No, it's great stuff. I appreciate it.
Steve goes on to say this. He says, besides intellectual humility, contemporary research has identified two key attributes that are conducive to obtaining wisdom. And he talks about a growth mindset. Steve is familiar with social psychology and things of that nature. He quotes a lady, Carol Dweck, who is a social psychologist at Stanford, and he gives us a definition. He says, a growth mindset believes intelligence can be developed, seeks new knowledge, embraces challenges, perseveres through setbacks, learns from criticism, ultimately attains a higher level of achievement. Let me relate this in a context of my own life. You know, when you write a book, you're very invested in the writing of that book. You know, you've been carrying these ideas around in your mind, you've been thinking about them, and you kind of craft them out, and then you open yourself to criticism, peer review. This logic book, we had a number of people read through it, offer suggestions. Then we have our editorial team at Reasons to Believe. And what's very interesting to me, Joe, is I've learned some things. I've had editors in the past at Reasons to Believe raise a point about something, and I thought, nah, I don't know that that's a big issue. And then after the book came out, somebody would write to me and say, well, what about this issue? And I thought, oh, that was the very issue the editor raised. You know, this idea of being open to criticism, being open to growing and learning, not allowing yourself to kind of fall into an emotional defensiveness. That's a very important point, and it's a point that is written about in social psychology. So all of that confirming the importance of wisdom. Yeah. Okay, we'll move on to
quick comment. Yeah, Ken.
Please.
It's great to find people who are wise. Also, somebody may know a lot, and there are plenty of people around that we can identify as having a lot of knowledge. But it may be in our best interest, especially for on the younger side, to look for people in our church who are older. They might have a wisdom that you need in your life. So just another aspect to consider.
I think that's a great point. You know, there are times where I rely on my spouse. There are times where I go to my wife, Joan, because she knows me and I trust her. She has real care for me. I'm able to do that. You know, your point about being a young person and being able to go to older people who've gone through life, who've had, you know, lots of experiences. They've gone through the good and the bad. That's very, very meaningful. And again, in accord with the idea of looking for wisdom, hopefully gray hair does reflect that wisdom. Okay, number three for Steve is the Christian mind is discerning. He says it is a poor witness to the fallen world when the disciples of Christ are known not for their wisdom, but for their gullibility. I think of a passage from St. Augustine where he said that he cringed when in his time, so, you know, Augustine's living in the fourth and fifth century, he said he cringed when he would hear Christians kind of putting their or advocating a position of science that it was very faulty. And, you know, I think the idea of being a witness, I sometimes think about it this way, Joe. What if a non-Christian asks, well, if I become a Christian, will I become like you? Will I become like him or her? We want to put forth the best witness that we can. And in this area, I think a lot about the idea of how we handle truth. We should handle it, I think, as if it's sacred, because it is. And not just truth with a capital T, so truth about God or truth about Christ or truth about the Bible, but I think any kind of truth that, you know, if we if we critique something and we're in error, or even right down to the idea on social media, on Facebook, on other social media platforms, people make all kinds of quotes and attribute them to people. And because I love quotes and I like to use them, I always want to track them down. And they attribute it to Augustine or Pascal or Lewis. And so often, Joe, it's misattributed. I think Christians should be very aware of how they handle truth, that they're willing to correct themselves when they've made mistakes like that. And so the idea here again is, you know, challenges come up, challenges like yellow journalism, propaganda, conspiracy theories. These are issues that all of us have to take seriously. And I, Joe, I can't help but think about a quotation I've read most of my life. This is a quote from Albert Speer, who was in the mind of Winston Churchill, the most important Nazi. Albert Speer was a very close friend of Hitler, Adolf Hitler. He was, Speer was an architect, and Hitler always wanted to be an artist. So he struck up with a very strong friendship, so much so that Speer became one of the leading elite Nazis and ultimately became the minister of war munitions. And Churchill said the reason that Speer was the most important Nazi was he was so competent that probably World War II in Europe lasted 2 years longer than it should have. Well, here's what Speer said in his book about his coming into the Nazi party, entitled Inside the Third Reich. Speer said that he was just kind of swept up in it. He said, you know, I should have read Mein Kampf. I should have read Rosenberg's Myth of the 20th Century. He says, I was trained as a scholar. I should have looked at the issues. But he said, you know, the Nazi movement just swept people away. And he said, you know what? I bent the knee to propaganda. You know, how could so many people be wrong when they're cheering Adolf Hitler? Well, if that can happen to somebody as bright and thoughtful as Albert Speer, it can happen to us. Now, Steve quotes some passages here about the idea of being discerning. The Christian mind is discerning. He says, Ecclesiastes 7:21, also do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. So you want to be discerning in what you hear, what you read on social media, what you see on YouTube. I watch a lot of YouTube because I've given up my cable channels. And one thing I noticed just the other day, Joe, is people will put titles for what's supposed to be in that particular episode that you'd watch on YouTube. And often they make these very exaggerated statements like, you know, so-and-so destroys this person, or total refutation of Christianity. And then I watch it and I think, wow, that wasn't what they said it was.
Yeah.
You know, you want to take this very carefully and give it consideration. I think of, Joe, I think of you and I and our children. I know when I was growing up, we only had about 100 books in the home in which I grew up. There was an encyclopedia. There was some almanacs, and I'd always go looking to them. But if I wanted a lot of information, I had to go to the library. I had to go to the bookstore. So I had to, the focus was on getting access to the information. I think in the case of my kids, maybe your kids, they have access to the internet. So they have at their fingertips, they can go anywhere and everywhere. But I think the challenge that young people have, and I consider my kids young, and is what's the quality of the information? How do I think through it? How do I discern it? So it's very different. I remember my son telling me that almost all the reading he does is online. And I was like, oh my goodness. Well, you want to be very discerning. You want to be very reflective. Here's another quotation. This is a nice feature of Steve Willing's article. He brings in these passages. This is Ephesians 4:14, that we should no longer be children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men in the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. So, you know, the reality is that there are some people out there who are in the business of deception. Propaganda, straightforward, is I want to convince you through almost any means necessary to accept my view. And if it means I have to lie to you, if it means I have to deceive you, then I'm willing to do it. Now, it's hard to think that somebody would be like that, but remember original sin. It is an equal opportunity employer. Everybody struggles with that. And so that idea of being discerning, I mean, how often do the apostles, I think of 1 John now, you know, don't believe every spirit, but test the spirits, because many false prophets have gone out in the world. I think of the Apostle Paul in the apostolic church. They had prophets. Paul says, put them to the test. You know, don't despise prophecy, but test everything. Hold on to the good. In another place, Paul says, let them speak and then weigh every word that they said. Well, how would that be if we applied that to Christian television, where people make all kinds of claims? And I'm not picking on the Pentecostal charismatic movement per se, but people sometimes talk about their prophetic utterances as if they don't have to kind of back them up and confirm them. Christian television has far too much false doctrine. What if we applied that principle? Test all things, hold on to the good. That's honoring to God. So I don't want to be a doctrinal Nazi, but doctrine is really important. Getting some things wrong, Joe, not only means that you're believing false things, but it could potentially damn your soul. So we have the truth of God, and we have to really work at it. Now, Steve has written in the area of conspiracy theories. In fact, in our book, Clear Thinking in a Messy World, I quote Steve on my chapter on conspiracy theories and propaganda. He says this. He says, conspiracy theories are but one aspect of this problem. We are inclined to believe false rumors about people we know and about people we don't know. We are easy prey for hucksters promoting quack remedies and easy fixes. We fall for slick presentations and compelling, confident-sounding speakers selling bad products, bad policy, and bad theology. Mm. As anybody who listens to Clear Thinking knows, and you know, Joe, I had a lifelong interest in the Kennedy assassination. And what I think is very interesting is it troubles me that many of the conspiracy theories, which I think are false, but even if you hold some kind of conspiracy theory, what troubles me is the maligning of people's character. You know, Lyndon Johnson was not a perfect person. He had flaws as a president and as a human being. But if you accept the idea that he was behind the assassination of President Kennedy, or that other groups of people, if you're going to make these accusations, you better be right. And you better be careful that you don't get kind of pulled into that, because, you know, going back to the Ten Commandments, there is the commandment of not bearing false witness against your neighbor. So you want to be really careful about some of these things. And then Steve makes this point. He says it is indisputably taught in Scripture that Satan's primary tool is deception. I remember, who was it? One of our speakers here at a recent conference said that maybe in third world countries, you might have counterfeit miracles. But he says in the Western world, he said, the deception of the demonic is found in deceiving. And so that idea of discerning, I think, is, you know, is spot on. Let's see here. He has a quote from, I believe, Jonathan Edwards, who says, "Nothing sets a person so much out as the devil's reach as humility." Let me read that again. "Nothing sets a person so much out of the devil's reach as humility." That's a powerful comment.
Yeah.
Questions, comments, Joe, about this idea of the mind, the Christian mind being discerning?
No, it's a good reminder to practice these things, even though they seem difficult. I think it's easy to get caught up in different ways. As a Christian who thinks he's discerning, I may be susceptible to things that I'm not aware of. I may have blind spots, and that goes back to the component of humility. So even for those of us who think we're discerning, we may be sold on something that is not as set in stone as we think it is. So it's just another reminder, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, very good. Number four, and again, Steve Willing has eight principles, and again, I'm calling them aspirational principles of the Christian mind because we're striving, we're moving toward these. We may not have all of them, but we want to put them in practice. Well, his fourth one and our final one for this program is the Christian mind is not lazy. The Christian mind is not lazy. You know, think about the seven deadly sins. I'll give them to you in alphabetical order, Joe. Anger, envy, gluttony, greed, lust, pride, and sloth. Now, think about the animal sloth. You know, that slow, creaking, kind of fascinating little creature. Steve says this, "When was the last time you heard a sermon on sloth?" You know, you can be lazy. You can be lazy in your spirituality. Joe, I think sometimes, you know, we have a lot of discussion these days about people who fall away from the faith. I don't know if more people are falling away. Maybe more young people are leaving the faith than they have in the past. But when people talk about their faith is deconstructed or they go through a deconversion, I think sometimes the cause or the explanation is, Joe, that living the Christian life is not easy. And they drift away. They stop praying. They stop reading scripture. They stop going to church. C.S. Lewis says, you got to feed your faith. You know, there are these spiritual practices and it's easy to become lazy. And, you know, sometimes when I write and when I study, I go into my closet because if the television is there or, you know, if it's too easy to get on the internet, I've got all these areas that I'm interested in. I want to bring back the focus. Well, Steve goes on to say this. He says that according to the American Time Use Survey, across the span of a day, the average American spends more hours in leisure and sports than working. Those hours spent watching television, surfing the web, or engaging with social media add up quickly. On the other hand, we read less than 16 minutes per day. Woo. You know, I'll be perfectly candid. Before I took my Christianity seriously, I think my religion was sports. I was 24/7. during I watched baseball, I watched basketball, I watched football, I watched the Olympics, I watch golf, bowling. I mean, I was just attracted by all of it. And that was a big part of my life. As I've gotten older, in order to give more time to reading, more time to reflection, more time to study, I've kind of moved away from some of my sports. I might also say I'm not terribly happy the way some of the sporting franchises have handled political issues. I don't want to be told how to vote by the NBA or the MLB or the National Football League, but that's another topic. But I've tried to move away from that. I like to watch movies. I like entertainment. But I also try to give time to watching videos that will teach me, that will challenge me, that will bring that out. And so this idea of laziness, entertainment is a good thing. I think, I mean, one of the things I love about baseball is sometimes I can get away from the challenges of life and just watch a baseball game or think about sports, generally speaking. And by the way, that's one of the reasons I don't want people telling me running political ads. One of the reasons I like sports is to get away from that for a while, and just enjoy it. Here is a quotation that Steve gives, 2 Timothy 2:15. Study and be eager to do your utmost to present yourself to God, approved, tested by trial. A workman who has no cause to be ashamed, correctly analyzing and accurately dividing, rightly handling and skillfully teaching the word of truth. And that's from the Amplified Bible. So this is another issue that I think we need to take very seriously. And that is how easy it is to be given to these things. I like recreation. I like entertainment. I like vacations. But it's usually not those things that really drive me to develop what I believe deeply about the world. And Steve mentions the idea here. He quotes Daniel Kahneman. He talks about two ways of thinking, system one and system two. He says system one is quick, effortless, intuitive thinking that is characterized by snap decisions and judgments. He then says system two describes careful, methodical, analytical thinking. And obviously, he's counting that second one as the most important system. So, Joe, those are Steve Willing's the first four of his reasons for developing the Christian mind, and I'm calling them aspirational because maybe you've listened to those and maybe you feel like, whoa, I've got some room to grow. That's good. That's what clear thinking is all about, giving us an opportunity to develop and to grow.
Wonderful. Well, we'll pick up four more of these on the next podcast. Steve Willing writes a blog. It's called The Soggy Spaniel. And we got this article from his site, Eight Principles of Sound Christian Thinking. It's swilling.com. Swilling.com. That's where Steve writes. And his book that we mentioned is Superbia, The Perils of Pride, The Power of Humility. So, thank you, Steve, for the book and article, and we'll cover four more of these aspects on the next podcast. That's going to wrap it up for this podcast. You can reach out to Ken on X at RTB underscore K samples for questions or comments. We'd love to read them here on the podcast. And remember to get clear thinking sent to your device by subscribing to the Reasons to Believe podcast on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, and most podcast services. For Canned Samples, this is Joe Aguirre with a reminder, the goal of apologetics is not victory, but truth. Thanks for listening and join us for the next edition of Clear Thinking.
Thank you for listening. Your prayers and financial support are reaching people with reasons for faith in Jesus Christ, our Creator and Savior. To allow Reasons to Believe programs like this to continue, make your gift today at reasons.org.